Joining us again on The Drive, she is a senior fellow with the Middle East program at the Atlantic Council, as well as a former advisor on Syria at the Department of Defense. She is Jasmine El-Gamal. Thank you so much for taking time from Beirut today, calling in.
Thanks for having me.
So it's been a controversial week. It's been any number of adjectives for U.S. foreign policy. We have a pause. We have a ceasefire. We have agreements. We have concessions, depending all on your point of view, I guess. Let's start just by getting your general reaction on the events of this week with the United States and Syria and how it's all played out.
Well, I mean, you're right. It's been a pretty tumultuous week, and it's hard to make sense of what's going on. But one thing that we do know is that Vice President Pence and Secretary of State Pompeo just finished a visit to Turkey, where they met with President Erdogan and had a conversation about Turkish operations in northeast Syria. The meeting ended with an agreement to pause operations for 120 hours, which is 5 days, to allow the YPG to remove all of their weapons and basically retreat from their positions in the northeast. They have 5 days to do so. The Turks have promised not to do anything while that time is going on. And then after 5 days, if the YPG has fulfilled the agreement, then the Turks can indefinitely sort of end Operation Peace Spring. This is interesting, though, because the YPG, which is a huge part of the agreement, was not actually involved in the negotiations. They were informed, according to U.S. Ambassador Jim Jeffrey, afterwards, but they weren't actually involved in the negotiations themselves. So it'll be interesting to see whether they actually abide by it.
Let's frame a little bit of the context for that region. I mean, what were some of the dynamics in that part of the region that led up to the decision by the United States to announce their pullout?
Well, how much time do you have? I will give you as brief of a roundup as I can. So Turkey has always stated that it has a security threat on its border. It considers the YPG to be a terrorist organization that is a part of the PKK, which is also deemed a terrorist organization, not just by Turkey, but also by the U.S. Now, the problem is that some of those fighters were involved in an alliance that the U.S. created and supported to fight ISIS, which is called the SDF. Turkey was never really happy with that, but it sort of kind of let it go until ISIS, the fight against ISIS was over, and then started talking to the U.S. about starting to dismantle the SDF, starting to help Turkey deal with that security threat on its border by doing two things. One is pushing the YPG further away from the Turkish border in order to give the Turks a little bit of breathing space, but then also helping to move some of the refugees that are currently in Turkey into that safe zone, as the Turks call it, into Syria. Now, this was complicated by the fact that the SDF, which includes elements of the YPG, was allied with the U.S. and didn't really want to believe that the U.S. was going to eventually withdraw from Syria. So they refused to negotiate seriously. Well, some people are accusing them of refusing to negotiate seriously, either with the regime or with the Turks, to come up with a solution that is a little bit more palatable than right now. Meanwhile, you have the U.S. forces who are withdrawing from the region, as President Trump has always said he was going to do. And now the Syrian army and the regime are slowly but surely coming back into the northeast and re-exerting their presence over that region. So a lot of moving pieces and very unclear where it's going from here. But definitely those are the main things to kind of watch out for as we move forward.
Let's go back about a week and a half ago when the White House first released the announcement of the withdrawal, kind of a one-page statement on a Sunday night. It was really an unusual way to announce such a dramatic shift in policy. What did you make about sort of how unorthodox that was?
So the decision in itself was not an unusual decision. As I mentioned, President Trump has consistently said that he was going to withdraw from Syria, that he had no interest in forever wars, as he called them, and that he was going to leave as soon as he deemed ISIS to be defeated. Now, the way that he did that is what many people are criticizing. You know, usually when you make such a decision or when you take such a decision, you do it in a very deliberate way. You talk to your allies in advance, you give people plenty of warning so that they can make their own arrangements, and you do it in a way that is really kind of deliberate and managed very well, both internally and amongst and vis-a-vis our allies as well. And he didn't do that. And I think that's what kind of created this dramatic situation that we're in right now, is because people just felt like that they were caught off guard. The announcement also happened right after the SDF, our American allies in the region that were fighting ISIS, had dismantled some of their fortifications at the request of the U.S. in order to start going into talks with Turkey and negotiations with Turkey. So they felt completely blindsided because, according to them, they were following our instructions, basically, and operating in good faith. And then after President Trump had a phone call with the Turkish President Erdogan, he abruptly decided he was going to withdraw, and the SDF and the Kurds in particular among the SDF find that to be a huge betrayal.
And I believe after the announcement was made, even some of the U.S. positions were fired on by Turkish forces, correct?
Yes. I mean, mistakenly, I believe. But it was okay. Just such a chaotic kind of couple of days that it took folks a few days to figure out what was going on and, you know, which forces were where and who was supposed to be firing on whom. So it was a bit of a mess. And now what we're seeing with this 5-day pause in Operation Peace Spring, which is the Turkish incursion into Syria, is an attempt by all parties to turn the temperature down a little bit and give all of these actors, particularly the Kurds and the Turks, a little bit of breathing room.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you make of the president's letter to Erdogan? How did that play in Turkey? What was some of the reaction to that?
Well, I mean, as you can imagine, it didn't play very well. I mean, the letter was fairly condescending and had some very unusual language in there. Erdogan's advisors reported that the letter reached Erdogan's desk and he threw it straight in the trash. I don't, you know, for me, I don't put much weight on that letter. I mean, it felt like a little bit of theatrics, honestly, on the part of the president. We knew that Vice President Pence and Secretary Pompeo were headed to Turkey, eventually. And so I think the letter was just kind of a way for President Trump. I mean, he must have known it would be leaked. Things leak all the time. Probably a way for him to show his critics in the U.S. Who, you know, there has been real bipartisan criticism of his actions recently, of his abrupt announcement and of his, you know, quote unquote, betrayal of the Kurds, probably just to show them that he was being tough on Erdogan and that he could be tough on Erdogan as well.
Now, as is the wild card in so many of these situations, how does Russia play into all of this now with the U.S. withdrawal?
Russia, it's interesting that you asked that question, has clearly emerged as the winner in all of this because, you know, President Putin comes across, especially when compared to the sort of erratic actions of our president, President Trump, he comes across as stable and strategic and sort of the adult in the room. He invited President Erdogan to a summit in Russia. So President Erdogan will be heading there on October 22nd to discuss the latest developments on the ground. That coupled with the fact that Russia is the regime's strongest benefactor and strongest ally kind of puts Russia in a really good position to shape events on the ground, shape the future of Syria in a way that is favorable to the Russians.
Now, once the pause ends here, once that time is up, how do you see this playing out going forward?
Well, you know, it really depends, right? It depends on whether the YPG fulfills the spirit of the letter, basically. Again, they weren't part of the negotiations, so it's really difficult to imagine that they would voluntarily, you know, weaken themselves and dismantle their fortifications and withdraw when they weren't even part of the conversation to begin with. And that would leave them extremely vulnerable. And not really leave them with a lot of good choices moving forward. So that it's a big question mark that remains to be seen. If they do, then President Erdogan has promised to end Operation Peace Spring. If they don't, then I think President Erdogan will the way I see it is that he will perceive himself to have a green light to say, you know, to go and basically do whatever he wants to finish his mission in northeast Syria, because he will be able to say, look, we paused for 5 days. You know, they didn't fulfill the agreement. And so now we need to do what we need to do. It'll be hard at that point for the U.S. to look at Turkey and say, well, no, you shouldn't do that, because, you know, it'll be part of the agreement.
Well, many questions left to be answered, and we will see how it plays out here going forward. And the next, I'm sure it is not an issue that's going to go away anytime soon. So, Jasmine El-Gamal.
No, I want to just raise one point quickly before we leave, because some of your listeners may be wondering, well, what does this have to do with the U.S.? Why should we care about this anyway? Mm-hmm. The reason that people should care about this and how it might harm eventually U.S. interests is that we have started to see, because of all of these movements and all of this uncertainty in the region, in the Northeast, that some ISIS prisoners have already started escaping from the prisons that they're in, because they were being held by the SDF. The SDF now is fighting the Turks. And so there's a big strain on them. And we might see that if we can't find somebody who's willing to take responsibility for the almost 12,000 ISIS fighters still in the Northeast and the 70,000 families, the women and children in Al-Hol camp, if we can't find someone to take responsibility for them, and the U.S. has said it won't, then that is something that will, you know, might come back to haunt us as Americans.
Actually, an interesting follow-up on that. So with the withdrawal announcements, say the situation goes south there, how much harder does it make it, either in maybe for a future administration, to go back in and sort of reset everything again? I assume that it ratchets up the difficulty quite a bit.
Oh my gosh, incredibly hard, right? I mean, if you think... Right. I mean, if you think about where a new administration would be starting, they would have, you know, incredibly a weakened relationship with our Kurdish and Arab allies on the ground that were part of the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces. People don't trust that the U.S. is a credible and reliable partner. It'll make it harder for us to find partners on the ground if we were to have to fight a resurgent ISIS. And imagine thousands of ISIS prisoners running around the ground, us not knowing where they are. And having to get into that fight again, only this time having created a lot of bad will from our actions up until now. So I think it'll be a lot more difficult the next time around.
Jasmine El-Gamal, Atlantic Council, former advisor on Syria at the Department of Defense. Thank you so much. Live from Beirut, staying up late for us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.